Dow's down about 7 points. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and certainly an interesting night last night as, of course, the Iowa caucuses took place, and it came right down to a photo finish. Just a few votes, what was it, 7 or 8 votes or something, separating the first and second winners there last night, 8 votes, I think it was, with Mitt Romney taking the lead, and Rick Santorum, I think, is the real story there last night. Rick Santorum coming within 8 votes of winning the Iowa caucus. That's quite a story, especially when we think about where he was at not that long ago. And so on today's broadcast, I want to talk about some of the things related to the Iowa caucuses. I've actually termed the program today the Iowa Aftermath. During the first part of the program, we've got 3 guests today, and so we're going to move pretty quickly throughout the broadcast. But the 3 guests that we have today, up first is Edward Lee Pitts. Edward is with World Magazine, of course. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. And I wanted to discuss with Edward a story that he wrote about the concerns over the president's executive orders, specifically that the president is forthrightly saying, candidly saying, that he is putting forth these executive orders to work around Congress. And this is the first time, I think, that we have had a president that is using this as part of his campaign, basically. And so this seems to be really problematic. Of course, this relates to Iowa because the GOP candidates, this is one of the types of things that they see in the current administration that they want to do away with, that they want to say, hey, we need somebody new in this office when we see him doing something like this. Secondly, on the at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Steve Dace. Steve Dace is, of course, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host in Iowa. And I want to talk to Steve a little bit about his take on Santorum winning second place, I should say, in the caucus, but doing so well in the caucus last night. And so I want to ask him about that. But even more importantly, Steve Dace has recently endorsed Newt Gingrich. And so I wanted to talk to Steve about that. And by the way, Newt Gingrich is scheduled to be here with me on this program on the 17th. So we got about a 15-20 minute interview with him on the 17th before the South Carolina primary, so we can look forward to that. And then third, last but not least on the program today, I'm going to speak with D.C. Innes, and he has written an article called Christians, Why Ron Paul? Now, if you've been listening to the program very long at all, you know I'm no Ron Paul fan. And I thought that David Innes has written an interesting article. He brought out some points that I hadn't thought about, but he's no fan of Ron Paul either. I mean, he says some nice things about Ron Paul, so do I. General things, but when you get to the specifics, foreign policy, and even some domestic things as well, I'm no fan of the Paul policies. And so we'll talk about that in the closing 15 minutes of the program today. So we got a lot to do, and so let's get to it right away. Before we do, while I was thinking about the article that we want to go over today, Lee Pitts' article in the latest issue of World Magazine, and I was looking at this command and control and about Obama trying to do things his own way, this song came to my mind, and I thought, as this song plays, listen to the words of it. I was surprised at how closely it really matches up.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
Yeah, that curtain's November 3rd.
My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain.
Yeah, we're pretty certain about it ourselves.
I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway.
Mostly golf courses.
And more, much more than this, I did it my
way. Exactly, that's the problem.
Regrets, I've had a few.
We got a few too, like Obamacare.
But then again, too few to mention.
Now I think our list is a bit longer.
I did what I had to do.
Well, you're the fourth greatest president.
Saw it through without exemption.
Mm-hmm.
I planned each charted course.
Yep.
Each careful step along the byway.
It's called socialism.
And more. Much more than this, I did it my way.
Okay, enough fun for today, but I thought that that song kind of fit pretty good, and as you listen to a couple of the lyrics there, maybe you think so as well. Let's get a little more serious now, if we can, after that song. Let's bring Edward Lee Pitts, the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine, into the conversation today. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin, I apologize if your listeners were hoping to hear from Frank Sinatra, but it's just Lee.
Well, I had two options with that song, Lee. One was to go ahead and find it out on the Internet with actually Frank Sinatra doing it, and one was for you to do it here, do a little karaoke on the program that we've never done before. It probably would be the last time that we would ever do it as well, but we could have done that and had you do it. I should have spoke to you ahead of time.
Yeah, well, I would have needed a few extra days of practice, rehearse.
Yeah.
I'd be glad to do it.
A little bit odd how the words of that song, very popular song, of course, with Frank Sinatra, but a little bit eerie the way that it kind of lines up. This is exactly what we see with the president, right? The end is near, and he has decided to take the attitude that I'm going to do it my way.
I certainly think that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Republican from Kentucky, and House Speaker John Boehner would agree with you. Even today, for example, Obama went ahead and did a recess appointment. He went ahead and bypassed Congress and appointed a new director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is a new federal watchdog agency that, again, Republicans would claim would be a more example of another regulation. But Republicans were not willing to approve the gentleman that he nominated, and they held up his nomination in Congress, and just today, while Congress is still on their holiday recess, Obama went ahead and did it his way, so to speak, and appointed this guy without congressional approval. He bypassed Congress, and both Boehner within the House and McConnell in the Senate have already issued statements calling that another unprecedented power grab.
Mm-hmm.
and calling Obama arrogant and. Yeah, I think they would agree with that song selection.
And the problem is not so much with the idea of executive orders. They have been used, according to your article in World Magazine. And by the way, for a listening audience, you can go out there and read this article for yourself. I did link to it. So if you go to my blog out on sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth, you can just click on the link there, and it'll open up the article for you out at worldmag.com. But also, people can go right to World Mag and look it up. But you you mentioned in the beginning of the article that the concept of using executive orders or presidents doing that is not a new concept. However, they've done it differently than what this president is using them for. Explain the difference between those two ways.
Yeah, sure. Executive orders have been around basically since the beginning of the country. There's been over 13,000 executive orders issued dating back to George Washington. What has shocked presidential scholars about what Obama has been doing is is the boldness of him saying, I'm going to go around Congress, I'm going to bypass Congress. You know, very rarely do previous presidents, you know, talk such boldness about going around Congress. And the second thing that has surprised historians who look into this is the how his executive orders have touched into the domestic policy issue, trying to fight the economic downturn with greater government intervention. A lot of executive orders in the past have dealt with issues that were not so closely tied to domestic economic policy.
And what we see here that is really unprecedented is there really appears to be, and I think anybody looking at this objectively can see that this is fits in pretty well with the campaign that Barack Obama is going to launch, has already launched, let me put it that way, has already launched for his attempt to be reelected. This fits right in with it. So when we see the president doing something like this, and it certainly appears that it's part of a campaign strategy as well, that it just makes it even more egregious to use the powers of the president in this way.
I mean, they're even using, you know, the slogan "We can't wait" in their press releases and in their signing of these executive orders. They're turning it into media events, and you're right; it's part of their campaign strategy of running against a do-nothing Congress and blaming Congress for the economic downturn and slow recovery, and Obama, you know, saying he can't do what he wanted to do because Congress blocked his ideas. So you're exactly right. This is just as much about campaign strategy as it is about public policy.
Obviously, they've looked at the poll numbers, and there's only one group of political folks that have a lower numbers than the president currently does, and that is Congress itself. And so, apparently, his the strategy group there behind his reelection campaign has said somehow we've got to put up Congress as being the person that you're actually running against, since Americans have such a low view of what the Congress is doing or has done. And so it appears that that's what he's doing, and he's using this executive orders to frame that somewhat as well. Now, some of the problems with that is I don't know if he, if the American people remember this as well, that his party was actually in control of the Congress for, 2 years of his presidency. Doesn't he think that is going to be part of, a little problematic with this strategy?
Yeah, that's what conservatives are banking on, that obviously, like as you mentioned earlier, Congress's approval rating hit a new all-time record low at the end of 2011, and so Obama, that is a sound re-election strategy for Obama to run against Congress, and of course everybody will agree, conservatives and liberals will agree, that one of Obama's strong suits is campaigning. So it'll be really interesting. He's in his wheelhouse now with the focus on campaign more than policy, and we'll see if the Republicans and conservatives can counteract his argument by reminding the public that for half of his first term, the Democrats were in control of all of Congress.
Mm. So not only did he make the statement, that we've decided to take matters into our own hands, and not only is he, actually signing these executive orders, we see it taking place on a regular basis now, and not only is it coming out in their press releases, the verbiage associated with this, but he also made this statement September 15th to a Congressional Hispanic Caucus. He said that until Nancy Pelosi is Speaker again, I'd like to work my way around Congress. And his spokesperson, Jay Carney, has actually come out and said that if there was a way for the president to do more without Congress, he would certainly be interested in doing it. And so that is very problematic, I think, for the president of the United States to be basically going against the Constitution. We've got a power grab here. We've got somebody with power trying to have more power. And I think at some point here, these things become unconstitutional. Would you agree?
Well, Obama as president is continuing a long-going storyline about people, whoever occupied the White House, Republicans or Democrats, slowly grabbing more and more power away from Congress and the legislative branch. When I talk to some fellows who cover Congress full time, experts and professors, they blame, surprisingly enough, members of Congress themselves for not fighting back stronger against the White House and mm-hmm. the bully pulpit of the White House. And they actually blame lawmakers for kind of wanting to have it both ways. They can get political credit for doing something, but avoid the blame for the specifics. If something goes wrong, they can blame the failure of the federal regulators and the bureaucracy. And so it's like a lawmaker out of one side of his mouth is saying that the president has too much power and the executive branch has too much power. But on the other side, he's saying that I'm glad they have too much power because then I can blame them when things don't go right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both ways, Obama. We've seen this before with him as well, saying one thing and then doing something completely different. So we see it with a lot of the folks up there in Washington in general.
It all goes back again to lawmakers in Congress wanting to protect their jobs, number one, and get reelected. And in order to have to do that, they like to have a villain, and that villain would be the federal bureaucracy. So they really don't want to do anything to reduce the federal bureaucracy because that might, make them actually have to hold the buck when it comes to making real changes.
Yeah, exactly. When I talked about him going up against the Congress, not as if we don't have problems with the things that Congress is doing as well. Most recently with the president, there's been a startling thing, and this was started kind of with one of his executive orders in 2009, January 22nd. The president signed an executive order to close Guantanamo Bay. Now, obviously, we know how that worked out. he didn't really do the calculations very good. However, just recently, we saw in the news two things take place. His vice president, Joe Biden, announced that the Taliban is not really our enemy. And then just the other day, a report came out that President Obama is either going to or very seriously considering releasing one of the Taliban leadership from Guantanamo Bay in an effort to a goodwill gesture to the Taliban in Afghanistan. And so I linked to that article. So we can see, I don't think when the American people learn how these things are being used and, how one is tied to other events that are taking place, I don't think they're going to be too happy about what's taking place. What do you think?
Well, one thing that people can say going into the election is Obama had a lot of, a lot of power to talk about his foreign policy successes, mainly with, Osama bin Laden, the death of Osama bin Laden, and that would be his main argument. And this, what these two instances you're talking about now with Biden and the Taliban and Obama and the Taliban, gives conservatives a chance to kind of counteract that. I mean, there's not much you can say about the death of bin Laden happening under Obama's watch. But now if the Obama administration, continues to, favor the Taliban, that will give conservatives argument to take the voters to say, hey, it's not his foreign policy success is not as good as he's making it out to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was pretty pretty easy. Obviously, we commend the administration for getting Osama bin Laden, but right away, people say, well, wait a second, it was SEAL Team 6, and they're not quite sure if he had a way around it, if it ever got out that we could have gotten him, and, they refused to do it for one reason or another. That would have just been politically detrimental as well. So some people had made the case that there was no way around it, that he had to do it. I always thought that it was interesting in that photo that they put out, that much talked about photo where they're all watching the actual raid go on. I've never heard anybody mention it, but I always thought it was odd that Obama is sitting there with his coat on, like he had gone somewhere else, like something, he'd been called in from somewhere else or he'd gone somewhere else and, kind of just stopping by to see what's going on there. So I never gave him that much credit for it. And, it happened to happen under his watch, but I don't think that other things that he had done really gave me much confidence that he had made that happen. So we'll see. I don't know how he's going to use that. I've got to ask you, Lee, before we close out today, I've got to ask you about your take on the caucuses last night. What did you think there, and what do you think about Santorum?
Well, obviously, this whole race has been about peaking and, a candidate peaks like Kane or Gingrich, and they fall down. and Santorum just happened to peak at the right time, right before the real chance for voters to make a decision. I think that makes the South Carolina race interesting. I don't think that anybody's going to beat Romney in New Hampshire. Gingrich is going to attack Romney in New Hampshire pretty aggressively, but in the end, that might help Santorum because Gingrich and Santorum are kind of have similar views.
Mm-hmm.
I foresee that Santorum's next fight will be South Carolina. I think that that'll be the last, probably the last race that Perry fights in, and mm-hmm. maybe by the end of South Carolina, it'll be a two-person race in Santorum and Romney. But I still think Romney is the front runner by far. But the story with Santorum peaking at the right time, again, shows you that a lot of conservative voters still have second thoughts about Romney.
I put out on my Facebook this morning that Romney received what I thought was the kiss of death last night. He actually got it right while Santorum was speaking, which was interesting, but he received the endorsement from John McCain. And as I thought that was maybe the last thing that Romney needed was McCain obviously looked upon as a much too moderate and, you know, almost, I guess the term that would be used was milquetoast, you know, just not very aggressive at all and, you know, basically didn't really put up a good campaign against Barack Obama. So when you get a person like that endorsing Mitt Romney, who's already looked at as part of being the establishment candidate, I don't think it did him any good. What do you think?
Well, I mean, clearly with the rise of Herman Cain and the rise of Newt Gingrich and now the rise of Rick Santorum, the only reason why those are occurring is because a lot of conservative voters out there are not satisfied with Romney and for mm-hmm. the very reason that you just listed. As a matter of fact, a bunch of conservative leaders are getting together this weekend in Texas, including James Dobson and others, talking about what kind of options they can get other than Romney and who they could support to maybe get another alternative to Romney before the Romney train gets going too fast. But even that meeting this weekend with top conservative leaders might be coming too late.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm pretty happy with Santorum and the rise there. It's going to be interesting, like you say. He'll be here in town in just a week or so. He'll be heading this way to do a lot of campaigning in this area, so probably get an opportunity to have him on the program. But I'm pretty happy with his stance on things, and I think he could stand up against Barack Obama pretty strong. I thought it was interesting that Ron Paul actually tried to categorize Rick Santorum as a liberal. As he was trying to attack him. Even the liberals laughed at that one. They've said they never have claimed Rick Santorum all those years that he's been running. World Magazine, by the way, I got a note from Warren Cole Smith last night, but he had mentioned that they have been following Santorum now since 2005. And in fact, he was on the cover of one of the World Magazine way back when. And so if you want to read some of the coverage that they've had of Rick Santorum from that far back, and some of the things, the most recent interview with Marvin Olasky is out there as well. You can go out to worldmag.com to check it out. And one more thing, World Mag, Warren sent me something on this the other night as well, that World Mag is currently offering an absolutely free, I think it was, don't quote me on this, but it was either 3 or 6 month subscription. And it's absolutely, you don't have to give your credit card or anything like that. You can just get a hold of them, give them your mailing address, and you get an absolutely free, 3 or 6 months, I can't remember. Do you know, Lee, offhand?
I do not, no.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's one of those two, but you get a free number of months with World Magazine, and so, folks, you want to take advantage of that. Lee, thank you very much for being with us on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me.
Okay. Touch base with us when you come down here to South Carolina. Love to have you in the studio.
We'll do that.
Okay. That was Edward Lee Pitts. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. And we were talking about his article about the executive orders that Barack Obama has been signing recently and why he's been signing those. We're going to switch gears just slightly in just a moment. We'll be joined by Steve Dace. And Steve's in Iowa, nationally syndicated radio talk show host. He's an author. We're going to talk to him specifically about the caucuses last night and his endorsement for Newt Gingrich.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Hi, this is John MacArthur, and bringing you biblical truth taught verse by verse is what Grace to You is all about. And that's why we're airing on Christian Talk 660 WLFJ. In order to continue on this station, though, we need to hear from you today. Once you contact us here at Grace to You, let us know you're listening. You can reach us at 1-800-55-GRACE. Thank you so much.
One of the things most alarming to me about today's culture is how evangelicals are responding to attacks against them. Many believe that somehow just having one's heart in the right place is all that matters, that a passion for Jesus and the life of the mind are somehow mutually exclusive. But burning hearts are not nourished by empty heads. We must develop our minds if we are to sustain godly passion and to have a clear message. Hi, this is R.C. Sproul inviting you to the Ligonier Ministries 2012 National Conference in Orlando, March 15th through the 17th, as we consider the theme of the Christian mind. I'll be joined by Sinclair Ferguson, Robert Godfrey, Michael Horton, Steve Lawson, Al Mohler, Stephen Meyer, R.C. Sproul Jr., and Del Tackett. Call 800-435-4343 now to get the early bird rate or register online at Ligonier.org. I hope to see you there.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. You just heard the commercial run there for Ligonier Ministries and the upcoming conference that's going to take place. This morning I tweeted about the conference, and it's actually called The Christian Mind is the name of the conference this year. And I said that it was a no-brainer to think about. If you're thinking about one conference this year to go to, and you can only go to one, I would recommend you go to that one, The Christian Mind, there at Ligonier. And so I put that out on my my Twitter account, and Ligonier Ministries retweeted it, and so to their 20,000-plus followers. So all of a sudden, my Twitter account was inundated with people following. So thank you very much, Ligonier Ministries. I appreciate that. And also, I wanted to let you know, we just spoke just a few moments ago with Edward Lee Pitts, and I mentioned a couple of things going on with World Magazine. You can go out there to their website to find out more. It's www.worldmag.com. On the rest of the program then today, we're going to speak with Steve Dace here in just a moment, and then following up with him, we're going to have D.C. Innes is going to be joining us to talk about Christians, Why Ron Paul, and so he'll be joining us for the last 15 minutes of the program. Steve Dace is a host of a nationally syndicated radio program. He's the author of the book We Won't Get Fooled Again. We talked to him a little bit about that just a week or so ago. He's also a columnist for townhall.com. Many people in our listening area now follow him because Steve is right here now on Christian Talk 660, and so you can hear his broadcast here as well. One of the things I wanted to ask Steve about was, one, just a little bit of his feedback about last night and the caucus aftermath in general, and then secondly, he has most recently endorsed Newt Gingrich for president, and so I wanted to talk with him about that endorsement, why he feels Newt is the guy for the GOP. Hey, Steve, welcome back to the program.
Good to talk to you again, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Well, you just heard the brief outline there, but first of all, let's just get a quick snapshot of your views of last night. What did you think of, I guess, Santorum's the big story, right?
Santorum is the big story. Mitt Romney got 66 more votes than he got 4 years ago in Iowa. So, I mean, he pretty much has the 25% that represents the Republican Party establishment everywhere he goes, and the establishment never breaks ranks. Santorum was the benefactor of a key endorsement. A good friend of mine, Bob Vanderplatz, who runs the Family Leader, which is the biggest, by far, Christian pro-family organization in Iowa.
They gave him that endorsement 2 weeks ago. That was the only thing really on the ground that changed for him, and it changed the complexion of the entire race. And now what, where we are is heading down into your state, after New Hampshire, and as everybody in your audience knows, you do not win the Republican nomination without winning the South Carolina primary. So here's where things stand. Ron Paul is largely irrelevant now, and now it's really Mitt Romney and the establishment versus the rest of the conservatives splitting up the rest of the pie. And frankly, I think, Kevin, people need to start being grown-ups about this. And, you know, this has become high school, where, you know, my clique gets its own float in the homecoming parade, and, you know, and then I feel good about myself. If people want Romney to be the nominee, we'll just keep playing this out the way we are right now. He'll take advantage of a splintered field and be the McCain of 2008, except it would be worse because we're actually playing offense this year. We weren't even playing offense 4 years ago. Or people that are conservatives of every stripe can say, at some point, this has got to cease being about high school ego, and it's got to start being about what's best for the future of our children and grandchildren. And people have to set egos aside and say, we have to defeat Mitt Romney for this nomination. And we can't do it when there's three or four of us all going for the exact same voters.
I was mentioning a few moments ago that to me, it seemed like that Romney got the kiss of death last night. While Santorum was speaking, by the way, he got the endorsement from John McCain. I can't see that as a good thing.
I don't know about you, Kevin, but as a fellow believer, brother, I love it when the wolf in sheep's clothing takes off the lambskin and sort of displays their shiny fangs for us all to see. It makes them easier to target later on.
Yeah. Well, I thought that, well, a couple things. One, you should consider, we work it out here with Gary, and I'll say it on air so that we've got him in a place where we can really have some leverage with him. But you should come on down and do the program here with me in South Carolina while the just before the primary down here. I give you that open.
I'd love to do that. My guess is the Gingrich campaign would probably love for me to do that.
Well, he's actually scheduled to be on with me on the 17th. So Newt Gingrich is going to be on with me, and you got an open invitation. You want to come on down and do the broadcast with me one of those days, or for a couple days beforehand, you got an open invitation. So,
well, this is where I think now I say my people will talk to your people, and let's see if we can make it happen.
Let's do it. Well, let me ask you, when you were on last time, a week or so ago, before the primary, you hadn't endorsed anybody yet, and I thought, the way you were talking, that you were probably leaning towards a Santorum endorsement, to tell you the truth. I like Newt Gingrich and a lot of things he said, and I would be struggling there between Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum on a lot of these, you know, about who to throw the support behind. Tell me why, in your opinion, I should go to Newt Gingrich rather than a Rick Santorum.
Well, let me say this. I know of all the candidates, I probably know Rick Santorum on a personal level the best. And I got to know a few of them personally pretty well. He is really one of the most genuine guys you'll ever meet, decent fella. Listen, if he's president of the United States, man, you're not getting any complaints from me. I'd be ecstatic to see that. So I'm not going to – I don't want to run him down. Let me just say why I'm more in favor of Newt.
That'd be great.
Okay, and for 50 years let me just ask you a few questions. School prayer, was that taken out by the courts or by the Congress?
The courts.
I was thinking about the courts.
Yes.
The eradication of Christ from the entire public sphere, including Christmas programs and schools, was that taken out by the courts or the Congress?
Courts once again.
Yeah. The loss of the sanctity of human life, did that come from the courts or the Congress?
Same thing. Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a pattern here.
The redefinition of marriage, did that come from the courts or the Congress?
The courts again.
Yeah, I mean, it was the courts that said you have to take taxpayer funding and to illegal aliens in the Plyler decision. It was the courts who said that your private property rights can be confiscated for strip malls from developers in the Kelo decision. Over and over again, the left has used the courts as a blunt instrument to the point of almost becoming a machete against the U.S. Constitution and our God-given rights. And I have vetted these candidates here in Iowa as closely as almost anybody in the United States has had the chance to do the past 6 months. And in the end, the one candidate I became convinced historically understood what the left has done with the courts, but then also provided a mechanism to do something about it. And see, this is the key. This is where a lot of Christians mess up. A lot of Christians think, if I just believe the right things, everything will be okay. Hmm. No, you have to apply what you believe. There's an entire book in the Bible about this. It's called James.
Mm-hmm.
You have to apply your belief system. What does that look like? If I tell my wife all the time that I love her, but I don't show it in anything I do, it doesn't matter. It's just words. If I tell everybody I'm a Christian and I love Jesus, but it doesn't change the way I live my life, nobody gives a rip. And so everybody can tell me they believe life begins at conception, but when you sign a personhood bill and the court says we're going to strike it down, what do you do as president? Do you honor your oath of office to defend the Constitution, or do you defend the court's opinion? And see, Newt is the candidate in the race that I believe not only understands historically where we're at, because I think most of them do, but then also has a mechanism by which to do something about it. But here's the third key. The third key is Newt's mechanism is something we used to do in this country a lot prior to the 20th century. And therefore, since we've had government school education undo a lot of these sort of American belief system for the last generation or so, to go back to the way we used to govern ourselves is going to require a president who can articulate this to the American people in a way that doesn't seem radical and doesn't seem like it's impossible, because he's going to have to literally teach the American people something they haven't been taught for 50 years in public schools, when we've all been taught that the courts are basically God. And in my view, if we do not recover this rule of law, Kevin, we can have a person with all the convictions we want. Nothing will change. And we've seen this for 50 years. It's a whole chapter in my book. We elect all these Republicans, and the courts just get rid of everything they try to do every single time. And at some point, we've got to get back to a country where the laws are made by the people we actually elect, as was intended.
Mm-hmm. Well said. And I've heard Newt Gingrich speak a number of times. And as you're mentioning when you hear him speak, he comes across as somebody who understands the process. He understands the historical background of it. He speaks very well. You walk away with feeling that a lot of the other candidates, it was rhetoric, you know, we've got to have Obama out. But then he would stand up and say, well, you can't just say that. You have to do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. It has to go through this way. And you go, wow, you know, I know the general consensus now is we don't want somebody who knows the problem. We don't want an insider. But, boy, it sure is helpful having somebody who knows how the thing actually works and can undo some of this.
Who is better to deconstruct Pharisaic legalism than the Hebrew of Hebrews? Who's better equipped to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you read, what is Paul doing, for example, in books like Romans? He is deconstructing the religious system that stands in opposition to Christianity. And he understands it better than anybody, because he himself used to be an adherent. And I think this is often, you know, that to me is exactly what we need. We need a president who can actually do something. You know, it's happened to the Republican Party, and it's even happening. We see this in Christendom. We see this with denominations. Everybody's so concerned about whose name's on the front of the door and whose name's on the back of the jersey. And everybody wants so many media, since I've endorsed Newt, have said, well, aren't you supposed to endorse the most Jesus candidate? Mm-hmm. What I'm supposed to endorse is the candidate that does the best to honor his oath to God for my children and grandchildren. That's what I'm supposed to do. Someone can tell me they love Jesus all they want, but if they can't actually do what they believe, let's look at what you and I are doing right now on the radio. There are people that you could talk to right now on the radio that know a lot more about the Bible than I do and have a fundamentally deeper worldview than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But why am I on the radio talking to you and they're not? Because they aren't interesting to talk to on the radio. They might be brilliant, but they can't broadcast. That you put them in front of a microphone, they put people to sleep. I mean, this is an entertainment medium, right? We're not just here. I mean, this isn't the library. I mean, can you actually do the job of broadcasting?
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for the presidency. Can you actually do the job? And most of the things everybody says they want to do, from balance the budget to cut taxes to reform entitlements, well, one person in this race has actually done all those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's Newt.
I got to ask you a quick closing question here, but won't just another conservative candidate realize that this aspect with Newt is important, and I agree with you, it is, and they just say, well, I'll do the same thing. When I get there, I will appoint conservative judges. I will go after, you know, these rogue courts and rogue judges as well. How would you answer that? Wouldn't they just say, well, these other guys, they could do it, and they wouldn't have maybe the baggage that Newt has, something along that line?
And believe me, I started with a premise myself because I have the same Christian worldview, and I'm aware of Newt's baggage better than anybody is. So, I mean, I started with that. And here's the conclusion I came to. First of all, anybody who tells you their response to stopping the courts from taking away any more of our rights as conservative judges, that's a lost leader. We've tried this for 40 years. The Republicans have been appointing six or seven of nine of the Supreme Court justices since Roe versus Wade, which was a Republican court. We're not getting anywhere with that. It doesn't work. All right, because, listen, it's not about judicial decisions. It's about the separation of powers. Where is the power to make law and enforce law supposed to be? And it's not with the unelected branch of government with a lifetime appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a president that understands that. Number two, I was very involved in our judicial retention election, which was a fight over these issues in Iowa last year. And I can just tell you for a fact, because I was in on these conversations behind the scenes, this election doesn't get off the ground without Newt Gingrich. He put his political weight behind this, behind the scenes, to help us get the resources and the connections to get this off the ground. And that's when someone actually acts on what they say they believe. Again, it goes back to who's actually done some of the stuff here we're talking about. And then thirdly, if you're going to take on the whole system and you're going to do it with the entire liberal media and the public education brigade and the entire judicial and lawyer class against you, now ask yourself of these candidates that are running right now, which one do you think from a stage presence and an intellectual capability actually has the God-given talent to stand up against that onslaught and defend what you and I believe?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you ask yourself that question, you'll come to the same conclusion that I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, well said, Steve. You make a great point. And if anybody has actually heard Newt speak, you know, more than just the sound bites that you hear on nightly news or on, a little clip off the internet or something, if you actually hear him speak, I think you would be impressed with his understanding of politics, of just a number of things. He does come across as a professor when he's mm-hmm. speaking there, and you walk away going, wow, you know, he really understands what's taking place. Well, Steve, I got to run for the next interview here, but thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for your insight. I went ahead and linked on my website to your website so that people could read why you went ahead and endorsed Newt Gingrich, and they can read that for themselves as you wrote it out on your website as well. So I want to thank you for joining us, and again, maybe we can hook up here when the South Carolina primary is taking place.
Sounds good, Kevin. God bless. Appreciate the time, as always.
Okay, you too. That was Steve Dace. You can check out Steve. He actually airs right here on Christian Talk 660 in the evening, that is. And so you can listen here in the evening. You hear Steve Dace's program broadcast right here on Christian Talk 660. We want to switch gears just slightly. We're continuing with our theme here today where we're talking about some of the aftermath from Iowa last night, of course, in that race last night, the caucus race that took place there. Mitt Romney came in number one with by just 8 votes. Second place was Rick Santorum, was second, of course, which was a big surprise, just 8 votes less, and surged there tremendously at the end. And then we had Ron Paul was third, I believe, with around 21% of the vote. I don't have it right here in front of me. And then Newt Gingrich, and I think he was 14 to 18, somewhere in there, percent of the votes as well. And so we've been talking about a number of issues surrounding that. Joining me now on the program is D.C. Innes, and he has written an article called Christians, Why Ron Paul? And again, I linked to that on my website. My website is sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth, and so you can go out there and read that. Let me tell you a little bit about David Innes. He's an associate professor of politics at the King's College in New York City. He's also the co-author of a book called Left, Right, and Christ, Evangelical Faith in Politics. I won't have a chance here on the program today to talk with him specifically about that book, but I do want to get him back on the broadcast to see if we can, maybe him and his co-host, they talk about it. I'll give him to give us a little summary of the book in just a moment. But he also writes a weekly column for worldmag.com, and so he's very busy in all of these endeavors. But, David, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit. I alluded to your book there, but before we get started on what you wrote about Ron Paul, I wanted to just give you the opportunity. Give us a little synopsis of your book.
Well, the Bible is not silent on politics. The question is, what does it say about politics, how we should govern our lives, this hugely important topic? And I argue that the Bible supports what we would call a conservative political position of limited government. And my co-author, Lisa Sharon Harper, argues for a more expansive government and what we would call the left wing or liberal position in America.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a conversation back and forth.
Well, maybe we can work it out here, but I'd love to get you back on and maybe with your co-author as well and just have that conversation. I think it would be an interesting conversation, so we'll try to work that out off air and see if we can set up a date to be able to do that on the program. Let me ask you specifically about your article about Ron Paul. I would imagine, I didn't get a chance to read through all of the comments that are on the blog, but I would imagine you took a little bit of flack from 530 comments that were made out on your online article entitled "Christian, Why Ron Paul?" with a question mark there afterwards. Tell us a little bit of how it was received.
Well, I think I'm going to write on Ron Paul every week now because the response is always strong. The what I call the Paulistas, they come right at you. They believe very strongly in their man, and there's a lot to believe in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he has, as we've seen with many other of the candidates in this primary season, a tragic flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And the electorate looked at him. They considered him. They raised him up. They examined him. They found the tragic flaw, and what we saw on Tuesday night was Paul coming off that peak.
Mm-hmm.
And if it had been another week, he would have been lower in the polls still. Yeah,
I think so as well. I saw the exact same thing when, people hadn't been scrutinizing. You know, they heard what he said, and some of what he said resonated with some people. They feel that we're in such bad straits that we do need some sort of a radical answer like this, you know, to it. And so that resonates with some people. But I think when they find out the details behind those statements and what he means by some of these things, I think then any reasonable people start wondering if this isn't really going too far. Now, you have spelled that out somewhat in your article, and I thought you did a very good job. Let's say right up front, you say a lot of good things about Ron Paul, and I totally agree. A lot of great and gracious statements about him. But the part that we're getting to is where do we begin here when we look and we say, well, you know, the view that he takes on these issues are not really something that we should be supporting.
Well, he's to his credit, he is incorruptible. Incorruptible. I mean, you want somebody in power who isn't interested in power and isn't interested in money, and he has no interest in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's for limited government, which, of course, I argue in my book, Left, Right, and Christ, is biblical and fundamental to freedom. And he's pro-life, but his libertarianism leads him to a... How should I? Morally indifferent government, morally hands-off government is perhaps the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, no, he just wants these moral questions decided at the state level because he's a constitutionalist. But that's not what I hear him saying in the debates, and I hear what everyone else hears. He wants to legalize drugs, he wants to legalize prostitution and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
But biblically, one of the purposes of government is to punish evil and praise what is good. And punish evil means punishing moral evils, to create and preserve a moral environment in which we can use our liberty well, pass on our values, biblical values to our children without competition from the culture. So you don't want prostitutes walking up and down your road. You don't want drugs advertised on television. Get your crack here. We'll discount it. This sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's as we all know, it's hard to raise godly kids when the whole culture is going down the drain and is trying to drag them with it.
Mm.
And part of the purpose of government is to preserve a moral environment where that doesn't happen, you know, to the extent that government can, and that's not absolute. But
yeah.
We can certainly, you know, ban prostitution and certain drugs and so forth.
Sure. It almost comes across in this pendulum swing, you know, that we are reacting. It's an overreaction, and I think a dangerous overreaction, where we see an out-of-control, overspending government that I totally agree with them. But I think that we can actually do worse if we respond to this in an unbiblical and overreaching manner, i.e. no government at all. I think it would lead to a sense of anarchy in the country, and I think anarchy is the only thing that is worse than what we see now. President Obama used this analogy about the car being driven off the road, and he used that numerous times to bludgeon the GOP, saying they want the keys back and so forth. But using that proverbial idea that the car is off the road, to me, Ron Paul is the guy who reaches over the shoulder of the driver and yanks the wheel to one side, which, of course, will flip the vehicle and cause more damage and, you know, more harm than is already being incurred from driving off the road. Do you think that's a valid illustration, and do you see that in some of the policies of Ron Paul?
Well, I think that is good. Another way of looking at it is that he doesn't believe in the car itself. There's just individuals on their own individual journeys walking along, occasionally trading things, commerce and so forth, whereas political community is an organic whole. It's something we share. It's a life we share, and it has moral content. And libertarians don't accept that. They see only individuals.
Mm.
But community is real. The moral bonds of community are real. And we need to preserve the moral character of our community if we're going to flourish as a community.
He seems to have a fundamental different view of anthropology and of the nature of man. He doesn't really seem to understand the concept of depravity and that man needs to be restrained in his evil. I see this, you know, in his foreign policy, he thinks that Iran, you know, doesn't mean us any harm inherently, that it's only because of our bases being over in Saudi Arabia or something. Also with this idea of, you know, just removing all restraints upon people in this country, that government doesn't play that role at all. To me, it's a fundamental flaw in his understanding of humanity. What do you think?
Well, that's true. I mean, he would say that people are, I think it's his response to the problem that is the problem,
mm-hmm.
The problem of evil. Libertarians believe that because people are wicked, they can't be trusted with government power, and if we disperse power enough, then people will just follow their self-interest, and everything will be more or less fine. But the framers of our Constitution saw the same problem, human wickedness, and they saw that the wickedness not only needs to be restrained by government, but the problem is also in government. And their solution was modern Republican constitutionalism.
Mm-hmm.
You take that power in government, which is necessary to restrain people abroad and at home, and you take that power and you divide it between three branches of government. You divide it between the federal and the state levels, and then within the federal level, even within the legislature, you divide it between the Senate and the House,
mm-hmm.
and so you have ambition countering ambition,
right.
as well as accountability to the people. And it's hummed along pretty nicely for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the solution, not doing an end run around government, which
exactly.
is libertarianism.
Exactly. I think one thing that was telling is that he said that there was no moral imperative for the American people to get involved in World War II when we knew that the Jews were being slaughtered. I have a big problem with that, especially when someone is saying that that's the Christian position, that he's just making a Christian position for government. David, thank you very much for joining us today. Unfortunately, our time is gone. We'll have to see about setting up that other interview to flesh this out a little bit more. But thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it. Let me tell the listening audience, you can go out and read David's article out there on worldmag.com. He also has some links there to some statements by Ron Paul. We'll be back here tomorrow, right here on Knowing the Truth.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.